What's up? Gatlao Charlie here, and this is A Theatre Maker in Mzansi. This is my monthly podcast where I'm going to be sitting down with all the coolest theatre makers in the game today. I want to talk to them about their process, their politics, and their audiences, amongst a bunch of other things. I also want to talk to you about this thing that we call art that we love so much. Anyway, without further ado, let's do this. What have we been doing? How have we used the time that we have had on our hands to innovate? A week ago, I was sitting in a writing theory class debating the impact of the fourth industrial revolution on the work of a playwright. We could never have imagined that a few days later, we would have to face this question head on, and we were not ready. Whether you're a space, whether you're a freelancer, whether you're an artist that requires some kind of physical interaction in order for your art to take form, for the exchange to happen, in this week, you're crying because you were caught napping. Because I was caught napping. Why have we not been ready? When CDs began to decline, the internet began to boom, and musicians and music producers saw the opportunity that it brought. Theater is still the same. We're still in the same place that we were 2,000 years ago. Why have we not innovated? It is nobody else's question to deal with. Not government, not the patrons, not art lovers, but us, the artists. The indictment stares us in the face. Why have we not been innovating? Why were we not ready to immediately switch forms and function in a new way? Perhaps the beauty of it is that now we have time. Unfortunately, this is a moment bred by necessity. And we all heard that adage growing up, necessity is the mother of invention. So what are we going to invent in this time? How are we going to reinvent ourselves? How are we going to recreate ourselves in such a way that is going to ensure that the next time there's a quarantine, we're ready. We're ready. Pick and Pay doesn't close down because of the quarantine. They just emigrate to their online platforms. Same with banks, same with many other industries. Now, we're not alone in the theater industry. There are many industries that still require that face-to-face, people-to-people kind of contact. I cannot speak for any of those others, but I can speak for me. Me as a theater maker, I was not ready. I was just not ready. Wallowing in self-pity doesn't help us. We're faced with new challenges now. We're faced with new ways of how we need to be. These are ontological questions. We can no longer exist in the ways that we have existed up to now. We don't know how long this is going to take. We don't know how long we're going to be without the physical kinds of gigs that we used to have. We don't know how long we're going to have to function in these ways. So what do we do with the agency that is now being developed out of necessity? I'd like to hear from you, artist, freelancer, wherever you are in the world. How are you coping with this forced isolation? How are you going to ensure that next time it happens, it doesn't catch you off guard? How are you going to ensure that even after it is gone, you can still capitalize in a way that its presence does not stop your flow? Let me hear from you. You can drop a comment in the comment section on whatever platform you desire. You can drop us an email. You can drop us a DM. You can drop us a WhatsApp. Wherever you're accessing this podcast, leave me a comment if you're a freelancer. How are you coping with the coronavirus? All right, so now let's move back to the final installment of our supper with the amazing Kucho Green, and best believe I'm going to be leveling this question to her so that she can give us a final round of questions next week. So if you have any questions for Kucho Green out of the conversations that you've had in the last couple of weeks, please do forward those to me and I shall forward those to her, and we shall hear from her in the last week. I already have a couple of questions lined up from the Prodigal Son, from Faye, our resident content producers and researchers, and we're just going to be giving her a little bit more so that she can give us a little bit more. As you remember, we were talking about what she wants to emerge out of her processes and what she would like audiences, how she would like audiences to emerge out of encountering or experiencing her work. And so we pick it up, our conversation, our supper, on the question of process.
Yeah, and I mean, like in process, you kind of understand people a little bit more because you're walking in their shoes. Uh-huh. And I think by virtue of doing that and being able to embody that, uh-huh. those that watch may not necessarily step into the shoes, sure. but they are aware
yes.
that those shoes are worn by a particular person who yes. has a particular kind yes. of disposition, who has a particular background, who also they behaved in this way because of one, you two, know, three. Sure. yeah.
Then it makes sense when you say you create or you tell stories around not the concept of time, but around time mm-hmm. itself, right? Mm-hmm. To say that mm-hmm. I'm trying to capture the essence. Sort of like a zeitgeist piece that, you know, tells us where we're at in the journey that we've been yeah. moving along.
Yeah.
Do you think that it can be, because I feel like you're speaking more about the experience of theater, right? Mm-hmm. When you're speaking about how, what it does to the human beings experiencing the process. Is it the same in the television and film space?
I think the film space is far closer in certain aspects, only because the dynamics around rehearsal are similar.
Okay.
With television, it's different. And what I've found and what I've experienced is that space, it's so microwave, you know, it's you receive scripts last Friday and we're shooting the next Monday, and you often don't spend as much time as you would with your co-actors because they ever changing and morphing is, you know, you're on this series and then you're on that soapy and then you're on that, so it calls for a different way of working, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. To suddenly have that chemistry that you have with that
sure.
Co-actor, to suddenly understand the ways in which you're going to work with one another. Mm. It's so unpredictable that you just don't know what to expect, sure. you know? So sure. expect the unexpected. Expect that you don't have control over anything. So with film, sometimes you have productions where you have the luxury of time to unpack the character, the world. So it's closer to theater than I think television is. So I find that television space quite volcanic, you know. Anything could erupt at any point and you just have to be... I don't know. I hope that you find yourself at the bottom of the volcano and that none of the lava is going to touch you and you don't get burnt. So, it's quite a different beast.
Have altogether. You ever thought about the long-term ramifications to the television industry due to the way that it functions?
Maybe to some degree, only because And in some ways I have ventured out into, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And so I know how I would want to conduct, you know, my sets.
Yes. How is that?
Like, why not give time
yeah.
to the actors?
Sure.
Right? And then they say, time is money. Sure. Great. Fantastic. I understand that. But I think we don't trust our actors enough. Mm. And if we really truly trust the casting, we should trust our actors, but we should also give them the time and space that they need on set. I think we should care more about, so I would care more about the performance than the frame. I often said that I wish we would invest in a director, but also a director of photography, but we need a performance director. We can't continue on this trajectory of just focusing on the frame and the composition of it and what's in it. And, you know, when directors, when DOPs, because they work really in tandem, you know, they work hand in hand. There's a mirror, and we care more about like the reflection of the actors in the mirror. It's like, ah,
look at that shot. Yeah, you know? Sure.
But as for the actors, it's like, guys, let's go. You know,
say like, your lines audibly, you know? And get out of here.
And sure, I also haven't appreciated that actors are not even consulted if they were okay with the take that they did. Like, are you happy? Are you okay? You know,
it's not about you.
It's just, it's in the can, seen in the can.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the next one, you know. So there are quite a number of ways I would conduct my set differently to what my experiences have been in this country. And I know for a fact that there are performance directors who are directors.
Yeah.
I know that they are there. And oftentimes I've learned and witnessed and observed that many of them are actors.
Aha. So right? It comes from coming out of...
Yeah.
It's empathy.
Yeah. Are actors.
Yeah.
So they get it because they would want the same thing done to them.
Sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. They give the space and the time. They take the actors away and like, okay, let's sit.
Yes.
Like, what do you think?
Sure.
What do you
see?
How do you see it? You know? This is my vision. What was yours when you looked at the character, when you thought about the scene, the dynamics, you know? Is there anything you want to shift? Is there anything you feel is not necessarily resonating, you know? Because so much happens. And sometimes the development of the character can get so lost. Because we shoot out of sequence, like, you must remember, Ore, no, this is like the first time that they're meeting, so they are reactive in that way. And I was very angry, and now, like, you know, so it's a lot of work.
Sure.
And predominantly, that's the actor's work. I get it.
Sure.
Because you're given scripts, so you must read the scripts, you must understand the projection. Yeah, of the character, the progress, the development. But you know, sometimes if not all parties are cognizant of that, then the director for that particular scene, for that particular moment, wants you to behave or react in a particular way, and you're like, but that doesn't add up because just last week I did that, and this scene comes before that, you know. So yeah, and I think actors need to be quite. They must stand their ground, man. We need to stand our ground when it comes to certain things. And yes, it may mean that concerning that production house, you may not work with them again.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Sure. So you don't have that worry about speaking out against something with the fear that you won't necessarily get work from the source again.
Yeah, no, because also, like, but us, but you know, like,
sure.
Motokimoto. Sure. And, yeah.
Clearly, you can create for yourself.
Motokimoto.
Yeah.
Mm.
What are some of the most useful lessons that you've learned as a result of being in the industry as a multidisciplinary artist?
Maybe not useful lessons, but the benefits.
The benefits, me, right? Okay. Come
because benefits. Because from being multifaceted, I can lecture. I can collaborate with other people from other disciplines. I you know, can facilitate. I can train. I can, you know. Sure, yeah, I can create for myself and help others to do the same. Those are the benefits.
Yeah.
And so, like, to be honest, it's multiple streams of income.
Sure.
Which is what we need.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, along that vein, or maybe not, say I'm a young upcoming theatre maker. I'm studying at Wits. I'm in your second year class. I'm studying at TUT, at Tux, I'm studying at YIT, I'm studying at an institution, or I'm just interested in getting into the craft, and I come to you and say, can I have some advice? How do I navigate this space? What do you tell those who are coming after you about how to survive as an independent artist?
So, to those that I've had the privilege of being in a space at an institution where I have the honor of imparting whatever little knowledge I've got, I've always said, if there's anything you learn from me, is be a creator. Learn how to create for yourself. Learn how to be as diverse as possible, you know? You need to be aware of our context and how our context is not necessarily conducive to a artist that tells themselves, I solely want to be this, right? When you look at theater, a lot of the opportunities to be in theatre pieces are far and few in between, and the space is quite charged with things that really shouldn't be hindering people from, you know, developing and being empowered in those spaces. But that's
What
the
it
status
is,
quo.
sure.
That's what we find ourselves in, right? So how do you then find ways around that? You need to be able to find ways around that. And I think this is why I've always, in the institutions that I've gone to, I've kind of been very strict about remaining a practicing artist. Because then what are they seeing? They need to be able to put a practice to what they're learning, right? Like, oh, so she's doing it, yeah? So the stuff that she says in class, the stuff that she says in workshop is not just textbook, right? It's in practice in her right now. We see, we understand, we get it. So it's always very important for me to remain a practice, like I cannot be locked down to something, right? Or in whatever. It's important that I have the space to still practice because I'm also still growing and still learning, and to kind of put all of that on hold because I want to focus on my teaching for the next 5 years, I think that would be such a injustice to myself, you know, to myself. Others may have other views for themselves.
You'd be so great here if you just stayed here.
Yeah, right? So, oof, but the other thing for me is I encourage you to see theatre. I encourage you to have conversations with the makers and the actors, you know, if given the space and the time after a show, ask them about the process, ask them about what it was like, the experiences. But immerse yourself as much as you can in the field that you are so interested in, that you are aspiring to be one of the, you know, yeah, know your world, read up more. Already in South Africa, we have a culture of not reading. And by reading, I'm not just saying just books, but read the world, read the people around you, you know, not read in a creepy way, but
I'm reading
I'm
you.
reading you. But observe what's happening around you. Like, take it in, you know, have an awareness of the things that are happening around you because that's where story comes from. You know, you're not gonna like thumb suck a narrative from I don't know where. Yeah, if you're creating a narrative around aliens, which I don't know how much access you have to aliens. Yeah, okay, we can. But yo, observe your world. Observe your world. Engage with it. And it's a tricky one to say. It's a tricky thing to do also because the world, Leon, is just full of, you know. But at some point, you're the one who's going to embody that particular narrative and that story, and or you're going to engage it, or you're going to, you know, have to interact with it on some level. try to know as much about the thing that you say you want to do. Yeah, and there are so many ways in gaining that information. Yeah, there was this interview with Don Cheadle. I always talk about this. So this young actor or aspiring actor comes to him and says, yo, man, can you just like put in a good word for me on one of your things?
No,
and
give me
just
want
to get into.
Give me in.
And then he's like, but what are you doing now? You're literally waiting for somebody to put you on? What are you doing now?
Mm.
Are you reading a play? Mm. Are you practicing a monologue? Mm. Or are you, you know, rehearsing a monologue? Or are you getting a friend to, you know, do a scene with? Mm. Are you seeing theatre? Are you seeing films? Are you reflecting critically on the stuff that you've seen, you know? What are you doing now? Like, what are you doing now? You want me to put you on, but what are you coming with?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love that.
Sure.
I love that.
Sure. Mm. What are you coming with? Do you have any background in this the work that you're doing prior to the decision to study?
No. As I said, our mothers are sweet. They always tell us, oh, you're such a little performer. My first play was Cage Birds, like I said, in Standard 9, directed by Janet Jobson. And I think it was one of those house plays, you know. I was part of Clarendon, and
this is Girl's Eye.
Yeah, this is Girl's Eye. So. it was a house play directed by Janet Jobson, and Caged Birds. And I remember my character was had an oral fixation, so they always ate, you know, they always ate something. So I remember stuffing myself with like so many muffins, you know, throughout the play. And I mean, I think that's where the seed was planted,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the seed I would go back to watering after being not rejected, but, you know, I don't know, like after the complications I had at aviation school. So, so I didn't have, and like I said, thereafter, I'm not going into the quite common stream of performance.
Yes.
I went somewhere else,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
into the physical theater stream.
Sure, sure.
So I didn't have prior knowledge.
And did you know about physical theater prior to studying?
No, not at all.
So how did
I just knew about acting.
How did you gravitate towards physical theater?
So in first year, obviously you have a thing called movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and Athena Mazarakis was my movement lecturer.
Yeah.
And I love telling the story. So at the end of first year, we like our paths crossed. I think I was going to the Matrix, and she was coming from that side of the Matrix, and maybe she was coming from the library. and then she literally just asked, "So what are you doing next year?" You know, and I said, "I don't know. I think I'm gonna continue with acting. You know, with drama, with performance, and maybe I'll." I don't know, writing. And she's like, come to physical theater. Come to physical theater for second year. We specialize with the body. I will. And literally she's like, I'll teach you everything you need to know about performance. Performance, you know? Right. So, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you saw something, you clearly it's there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Clearly there's something.
Sure.
There's something that she wants to now also
cultivate.
Bring out,
sure.
You know? Mm. Yeah.
And
I had no idea what was... Look, you... Through films, you know? Yeah, Ramona, Charlie Chaplin,
yeah,
and all of that. But
yeah,
you don't quite understand what
yeah,
that is. You
yeah.
don't... So, yeah, that's where I... Yeah.
Mm.
I was fed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was fed. And properly so. Mm. Proper, properly so.
Mm.
Very grateful for that.
Mm. And does that now permeate all the other work that you do as
totally.
An artist?
It informs a lot of how I approach work, how I personally work or create my own process, even with somebody else's process, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, just the kind of discipline I have, and yeah, yeah, it totally does.
All right, let's bring this to a bit of a wrap. Where to from here? What is the next? Look, I know you're busy, all right?
Imagine.
And we need to open your diary, you know, for the next 3 years to understand fully what's happening. But give me, as far as you know, for the rest of this year, what are you going to be up to?
So I am going to be directing Zips and Scissors, continuing the teaching until I leave for Hamlet at the Fugard, and writing, writing quite a lot.
Mm.
Yeah, writing quite a lot. So a lot of the stuff I'm hoping to stage next year, but I'm also trying to, I've been writing some TV stuff and film, so yeah, that'll be the work of continuing, well, I'll be continuing that until later in the year, and then start, you know, incrementally shooting some of the content.
So we can look forward to films.
Totally, and more so like series of and films.
Okay.
I mean, there's already a series that we shot, Stephen Okamp and I, called Sepiso, which I'm really excited for people to see. So we'll see.
When should we expect this?
So we kind of only shot two episodes, and so we want to, and if nothing bites, you know, I think we will continue in that stream where we keep shooting out of pocket.
Okay.
And then, yeah, until we have like all 12 episodes. And then
so you're just a storyteller creating stuff for yourself?
Yeah, stuff, content. Because I think we'll look at Papa sometime.
Sure. Sure, sure.
Yeah. I have faith and hope that something will, yeah, eventually come. That's 2 hours?
That was 2 hours.
Oh my gosh. Stop.
There you have it from the one and only Kucho Green. We're pretty lucky to be living in this time at the same time as Miss Kucho Green. And we know now what time means to her in terms of making work, about capturing the essence of a time. So interesting to hear her thoughts also on the TV and film space, especially in the time that we're in. You know, if we're going to be thinking about how are we going to, you know, run our own sets in the future, how are we going to ensure that there is a sense of social justice, the kind of social justice we want to see in terms of our industry, in terms of regulating things like sexual harassment, regulating things like gender discrepancies, regulating things of patriarchy and chauvinism within the space that we're in, dealing with issues of coronavirus. You know, what is the right response from the industry? What should have been the right response from the industry in this time? Like I say, I still want to hear from you. If you're an artist and you're figuring out how to stay alive in this time, please share this with other artists, because I'd like to hear from them, and so we can think together and collectively come up with strategies that are going to make sure that ours is not an industry that is going to disappear as a result of a pandemic. So let's keep the faith. Let's keep it pushing. Next week, we're going to be dealing with the questions. So you got to send through the questions, yo. Otherwise, it's just going to be me and Kucho Green hashing it out with the questions that I have for her. I have absolutely no problem doing that. But I'd love to get your voice in on this conversation. So please do send them through. It'd be great if you could figure out a way to send me a voice note, because I'd love to play the clip on the podcast so that people can hear it from your words unfiltered through my own biases, right? So send it through, whether it's text, whether it's voice, whether it's by email, whether it's by comment, whether it's by picture, whatever it is. If you just want to let Kucho know how much he inspires you, do send that message through, and I will ensure that the message does get through to her. And please make sure that you give us permission to let her know and to let the community know who you are with the question that you have. And yeah, look out for the next set of guests. We'll see if they're still keen to meet with us in these chronic times, right? But I'm pretty sure that they still want to, you know, think together about how we respond as 21st century independent theater makers to the issues that are facing us today. Thank you so much for listening. I'll catch you next week. Peace.